Kate Sutton. I want to thank especially Diana Campbell Betancourt, Ben Bothwick for having us, Bianca and the tech team for all of their support, and Beatrice Bulgari for filming this conversation, which means it can be available to an audience outside the fair, which is important. As Diana announced, Ian Kaufman is amongst that audience. For the past 2 days, for those of you who have been here, these talks have been focusing on different aspects of Biennale. We've heard from Chus Martinez talking about the pagan origins of Biennales, to the Prosecco economies mentioned in the last panel, to Casper Koenig's suggestive theories, also from earlier today. This particular panel will be looking at a proposition Jan Kaufman put forward in 2003 called "The Next Documentary Should Be Curated by an Artist." Since Jens is not able to join us in person, he did send a statement, and I thought I'd like to open reading his statement, and I'd also like to take advantage of his absence to have a photo of him. First off, for those of you who don't know, just a background on the next documentary should be curated by an artist. It was a project that came out of a conversation with Jens and the artist Carsten Kohler. Basically, between July and December 2003, they talked to about a little more than 30 international artists and just asked them for their own thoughts on this proposition, to make their own proposals. And so those artists range from Marina Abramovich and John Baldessari and John Miller, Joan Jonas, and Graham Johnson. We're amongst that crew, so we'll hear about their your contribution in a bit. When this project came together originally in 2003, it was a moment of this kind of the rise of the Uber curator, which over the last 15 years we've seen this idea of the sort of Uber curator give way to this now ubiquitous curating. So when you get to a hotel now, you might have a curated cupcake basket with your curated pillow menu and your curated playlist. So it's sort of at a moment where even the idea of the word curating has kind of reached a parity level. So my question for the panel after we read in the statement would be, since this context has changed so dramatically, is there still some relevance or value that we can get out of this question of whether a documentary should be curated by an artist? So here's Jens's statement. One of them, and I'm sorry, I can't do a Jens voice. I tried, but it's too long of a statement. One of the most discussed developments in the art world since the early 2000s, apart from the enormous surge of the art market, has been the rise of the curator, occupying a more and more central role in the ecosystem of the world of art. The growth of the profession brought with it enormous changes of how we think about exhibitions and museum programs, as well as the display and mediation of art. The publication, The Next Documenta, should be curated by an artist, which is produced by EFOX. We can keep Jens's photo up while we're reading, for prosperity. The publication, The Next Documenta, should be curated by an artist, which was produced by EFOX in 2003, was the result of a conversation with the artist Carsten Kohler in the summer of 2002, during a dinner in Stockholm right after the opening of Oakley and Wazar's Documenta 11. Kohler, who had participated in Documenta 10 in 1997, spoke of the ever-growing presence and importance of curators, in particular when it comes to the organization of large-scale global overview exhibitions. Curators' exhibition concepts and display ideas began to, according to Kohler, overshadow the work of the artists participating in those exhibitions and became the central element of the discussion and the conversation around the exhibition. It was not the first time that such a criticism had been voiced. In fact, the French artist Daniel Varin, who also contributed to the book, already formulated in his iconic text, Exhibiting Exhibitions, which was published as part of the catalog from Documenta 5 in 1972, a sharp critique of what he called the exhibition of the exhibition as a work of art, which was a response to Harald Seemann's work and his particular form of curatorial authority. When thinking about the book and inviting artists to contribute proposals for what they would do when given the task to curate Documenta, I purposely frame my thoughts on this matter as a question rather than a demand. I was, after all, a curator initiating a conversation and not an artist, and did not mean to take advocacy on behalf of the artist. Looking back at the discussions around the increasing centrality of the curator, the boom of curatorial programs and the position of the curator in general, I feel, in fact, that audiences, institutions, and artists grew quickly tired of this development and trend. After the entirely curator-focused 50th Venice Biennale in 2003, which was organized by Francesco Bonomi with the help of half a dozen or so co-curators in various sections, there was a clear backlash towards the role of the curator that could be considered the beginning of the end of the power of curators. In many ways, Kohler's statement was aimed at a very specific group and generation of curators, almost all emerging in the 1990s and early 2000s, who worked independently and outside traditional museum structures, among them Juan Rue, Maria Lenz, Joaquin Huesar, Francesco Bonomi, Hans Ulrich Obrist, Rosa Martinez, and Caroline Christophe Bacardia, among a number of others. I was perhaps, together with Massimiliano Gianni, the tail end of that generation. It still owed a lot to the curatorial ideas of pioneers like Seymour and Caspar Koenig, who I worked with at the very beginning of my career as a curator, a generation of so-called exhibition makers. So with the enormous proliferation of art fairs, large-scale exhibitions such as Documenta, or biennials, triennials, have also lost part of their purpose, which was to be overview exhibitions of contemporary art. As a result, the format of biennials and triennials has entered a stage of identity crisis, and audiences started to move their attention away from them, apart maybe from the prestigious ones such as Documenta or Venice, focusing more and more on art fairs. Especially a younger generation of artists and curators who came of age in the era of the global art fair did not necessarily see a big difference between biennials, triennials, and art fairs, which developed curated sections on their own that have set outside the more commercially oriented sections of the fair. While many large-scale biennials and triennials are increasingly curated by artists, the question is whether or not this is because the artists are being put back in the driver's seat to counter the focus on the curators, or if it is simply an idea to find a way out of the current disorientation many biennials and triennials experience at the moment of somewhat of a simple marketing publicity stunt without much future. So his last day, he says, I'm curious to know and understand why artists are even interested in this day and age to curate large-scale exhibitions in a similar way as curators and not offer much more artistic, radical, and challenging formats. So that was Jens Hoffman's statement, for those of you who just joined. In response to that, I wanted to maybe open it up with Ungreen and Dragset first, because you guys originally participated in 2003. So if you don't mind maybe talking about your response in 2003 and how it has changed or hasn't changed since then?
I think in these years there is like almost a cliché critique towards biennials and art fairs as such. Like where you speak about like art fair fatigue or biennial fatigue. But that critique mostly comes from people who spend far too much time at these events. I'm not so worried because I go to a lot of small artist-run spaces and I see art thriving quite well in other communities and other atmospheres. I mean, so I'm not so worried about like these formats being worn out or being a threat towards art production as such. I mean, we have met most of our friends at occasions where we were invited to big group exhibitions around the world. Of course, the format can change, but I also think it's weird to ask artists to come up with a complete different format because artists are so creative opposed to what? To curators who are boring? I mean, artists can maybe use their experience as having been participants in biennials and have a communication with the artist in a different way.
Well, when you're talking about fatigue and coming from mainly people who have been around these biennials too much, yesterday's panel there was a comment about what if we made the Venice Biennale into a kind of tea party where all the pavilions kind of put their name in a hat and everyone mixes up pavilions. And that reminded me of actually your response to the original statement in 2003, which does speak to a kind of fatigue. So would you mind explaining that to the audience? Or?
Oh, well, our response back then 14 years ago was a proposal to, you know, that the different biennials and large-scale art events would exchange locations. So the Venice Biennial would happen in Paso, Documenta would happen in Venice, and so on and so forth. But actually now, 14 years later, we see that Documenta is happening in another place, in Athens, for instance. Yeah, a little bit back, I don't know if everybody knows why we're here, actually, as artists.
fast-forwarded through the introduction a little bit because Diana was helping us out. But obviously, Elm Green and Dragset and Christian Jankowski have amazing international reputations as artists, have produced large-scale works for many of the Anami. But in particular, this panel, we're talking about Christian's experience creating Manifesto 11 in Zurich last summer. And then Elm Green and Dragset have also, as an artistic duo, have curated in many different formats, ranging from the Collector's Pavilion in Venice in 2009 to just recently what looked like a curated art fair booth in FIAC, which they installed a month before the actual fair opened. So the booth was by itself in the Grand Palais. But they are currently working on the Istanbul Biennale, which is slated to open in September.
Exactly. So I don't know exactly where to start, but you know, as you said, we have curated projects before, and I think for us, curating has never been like we never saw it as something completely other. I think when we started out in Copenhagen in the 90s, if we didn't do it ourselves, nobody would do it. We wouldn't actually have shows. You know, it was already a very established sort of 80s artist that basically, you know, had both the gallery shows and the museum shows, and they weren't going anywhere. So we were a whole group of artists, young artists, that you know, ran our own galleries or did festivals, performance festivals and so on. And we never thought about it as curating, but of course, in a way, it was, even though it was mostly the, you know, French in Denmark or internationally. And this we saw also in other cities, there was this strong connection, for instance, between Glasgow, the Glasgow scene, and the Copenhagen scene.
And with many of your projects, too, it's been hard to tell the line, like the Victoria and Albert project that you did in 2013,
yeah, but at Victoria and Albert, of course, we were able to deal with the museum's collection, and there we were also able to collaborate with the curators of the different collections at the Victoria and Albert Museum, which was great. You know, it could be Chinese vases, it could be photography, it could be the architecture department, and so on. But yes, we combine our own art then with objects, artifacts from the Victoria and Albert collection as well.
So maybe this is a good moment to bring Christian in too, because it was Manifesto your first experience officially curating a project, or had you also curated shows in the past?
Remind me just that also for me, curating was almost really the beginning, because just before getting into art school, you need to apply to art schools. I didn't come into many art schools, but then when I was in Hamburg, I could rent a shop window apartment in which I did organize shows. And even though I was just sneaking into the art academy in Hamburg, it also allowed me to bring people together and invite guest professors, and by accident, some of the professors there was Dan Graham, and he immediately came by this op space. So somehow, even in this first thing where I still applied in art school, part of this practice of coming up with ideas to bring people together and organize exhibitions in your living room
was already a starting point. And later on, there were also these emotions where some of the other art students wanted me to become a gallerist because they saw, oh, he's doing the shows in his exhibition place. Wouldn't it be nice if you would become our gallerist? And I must say, this was a moment where I really feel, wow, something really goes wrong. I always understood the idea to make an exhibition as a way to have a new experience and to meet new people and to come up with topics that different people would follow up in their individual way of dealing with topics or with dealing in architectural frame or the title. So it was already there where I felt that this is a very fine line in between those frames or formats, you know, where's the end, where should the artist stop to experiment and where should one call an artist a curator or a gallerist. I think exactly working on these lines became then part of all of my work, I would say.
Well, what were your thoughts when they approached you about Manifesto?
I was jumping for joy. I think, great. Thank you for inviting me, but also it was not just coming as a present. You know, this was, it was a contest. I was in between two other curators who came up with giving concepts for a show in Zurich. So Zurich was a given, and we all appeared on the same day in Zurich to pitch our ideas. And then there was a group of 20 people deciding afterwards.
Well, what was the process then that made you want to apply in the first place?
I didn't apply in the first place. You asked. I got a telephone call. So first, oh, are you interested to do an exhibition? I said, yes. Which? Oh, we cannot tell you. Okay. Mysterious phone call in my office. Great. Like 3 months later, oh yeah, you're now selected to one of the people who we like to ask and hear ideas about Manifesto. So.
Well, with Istanbul, I mean, we were talking about starting off and creating opportunities for yourself and working in shopfront windows and working with student houses. But that changes when you're working on a scale of something with an established reputation and an established history, something with a brand. What were your thoughts? I know you've gone back and forth a bit at the beginning when deciding to take on the Istanbul Biennale, which is a little bit different from even the pavilion in Venice in terms of the scale and your responsibilities there.
For us, the personal thing around it is always the most important, and we really like the biennial team. So because they asked us, we said yes. Actually, first we thought no way.
Because you had done a sort of a collaborative, or I'm not even sure if you call it a performance, but you've done an installation involving people from the community.
We took part three times in Istanbul, so we know them quite well, and we know the scene quite well. And that was, it was simply a personal thing that we were like, okay, yeah, we would like to do something together with these guys.
So no mysterious phone call?
No, not such a surprising email, but like, yeah, we didn't have so much time to consider it because we had to give an answer, schedule out what we had on mind in 2 weeks, so it was just jumping on. And we were joking, like, it's only one time as artists we will be asked to do a biennial. So if we don't do it now, we won't be asked again, probably. And it also makes you more free somehow, because it's not our day job as such. You know, like, if we really fucks up, we just don't do it again.
I think, you know, actually we did take part in the Istanbul Biennial also in 2013. That was done by Fulya Denci. She is Turkish, she's working also in Holland and many other places. That was a particularly complicated time in Turkey, as many of you would remember. It's the year of the Gezi protests. But that also still a time of optimism in some ways, because you know, the peace negotiations are still going with the Kurds and so on. But you know, her initial idea for the biennial was to do all the projects in public space. which turned out to be impossible, of course, due to the protest and activism, and not least the way that these were beaten down. So the biennial had to move inside. But during that time, Fulya and us had a lot of conversations and also did a longer interview together over a few days about art and public space. And we followed also the process of us doing this project in Munich a few years ago, that we called A Space Called Public, or it sounds better in German, Hoffentlich Öffentlich, where we basically took over the public art program for the city of Munich over 1 year, where we were able to work with artists and do this 13 quite large scale, sometimes durational projects in public space that were all temporary, apart from one. I think Tatiana Tuli's sculpture actually stayed in the end, the city bought it.
So one aspect of biennales is that they allow for the commissioning of new artworks from artists. So it sounds like through those kinds of programs you had already worked with commissioning artists. Have you ever worked in a situation where you were commissioning artists and producing work as in the curatorial role alongside them?
Of course not on that scale.
Because Manifesto 11 had a very specific structure to it.
I also, for me, the biennial, my experience with biennials was always that you go as an artist and there's a theme or there's a space, and then you have a budget and also some people to help you to produce a new piece. So for me, the part of production was key for invitations for the Manifesto 11 too. And then also to think somehow local, to say, in Switzerland we will produce, and we will not only produce on the site, but also with people who live in Switzerland, in Zurich, to guide the artists and to be of help and inform them and even contextualize the piece by bringing the result of this collaboration into their working and environment, or into their you know, it's not public space, it's more corporate space. So if it's a dentist that worked together with one artist, we showed also part of their work in the dentist's office, or with the Swiss police, so we had some in the police station, we presented artworks in there, which was done as a result of the collaboration between a group of policemen and one artist.
But even then, that brings up a different question, because one of the things I want to ask you about in a moment is the responsibility you feel as a curator versus participating as an artist. But in your particular case, your responsibility is not just towards the artist that you're commissioning, but also the people who are hosting you. The dentist is a great example, because those photographs that were produced, if you want to tell a little bit about that situation.
It was Torben Röttland who actually asked already before, after the first meeting, that the dentist should collect all of the tooth from the patients that she pulls out. So then all of these tooth were collected, sent to the studio from Torben, and he made some nice arrangements with it. He also came back to work with arrangement of pulled-out tooth and combining this with fast food and arrangements of food. So,
also those images he made from people's dental fantasies that were so gruesome that the patients weren't comfortable having them in the room.
We installed it together with the dentist. First, the reaction also of the dentist seeing this result was a bit shocking. But then the daughter was into that work, and they discussed more and more. But we were hanging it in the waiting room of the patients, and we recognized that she also took it down in between because she didn't really know if it should stay or would shock the patients. But in the end of doing the biennial, it was there continuously, and it also she started to be more and more self-assured about her statement, what she did with art, and also how media covered this. So that many times with this host, that's how we call the people in Zurich, they were very different. Some of them took it as a possibility to talk about their profession and bring topics of the profession into the discussion. Some took it as kind of advertisement. Some took it just out of interest or out of love for the art. So it was also sometimes this were not very clear frames. Sometimes this was everything of this together, or sometimes it started on that side and ended on another side. So
just to back up, I'm sorry, we kind of skipped ahead on that because your Biennale was called What People Do for Money, and it involved pairing up artists with local professions, people in like you're saying, dentists, the bank, the police, and then having them do projects in collaboration with those. But responsibility towards your hosts, which I like that because it makes you sound very charismatic, your responsibility towards your hosts changes a little bit. Like you were saying with Julio was working in a very politically charged moment in Turkey. It was still a very politically charged moment at this point everywhere. So I know when you were originally talking about taking on responsibility for this Biennale, you had some certain thoughts about that. Can you elaborate a bit?
It's of course something to get used to as an artist, where you're only responsible for yourself or to each other at least, where you can be far more open-mouthed. You can be impolite to people in panels. You can be.
You can show pictures
of Jan Topman. Whereas suddenly you're a curator for a whole institution. And if you're maybe too direct or not so diplomatic, it will harm the institution. I mean, I don't want to be responsible for the Istanbul Biennale. It'll never happen again. So especially in a political, very, very difficult situation as it is right now in Turkey, it is a balance act. It is very difficult for you as a person who normally always just speaks what is on his mind and is open about your different views to handle that situation, but we do our best.
Do you mind talking a little bit more about what your best means? Because from what I understood, you're working with some of the local activists, local groups there.
Yeah, we have involved people who have been harmed by the situation now, who got fired from their jobs in academies or in different professional situations. So we somehow have created a platform for them to continue their work in a different format under our biennial. And then we found out, like, we were very much in doubt after the coup attempt last summer, 15th of July, if it would make sense to make a biennial in such a political climate. And we went to Turkey and we spoke with a lot of people, and everyone were like, please don't pull out. Orhan Pamuk said to us directly, like, don't chicken out. A lot of people from different communities said we actually need to have someone who doesn't turn their back to us and instead get people to come and we can continue our dialogues. And that made us encouraged to continue our work.
Do you
want
to add anything to that?
I think like one word that became very important was, you know, the dangers of disengagement, which they experienced a lot in Istanbul and Turkey, that, you know, rather than going into dialogue with people and being of help or inspiration to the rather fragile communities that are there and that feel more and more isolated and threatened even, people are simply turning their back and either not coming or even ignoring the scene somehow.
You had mentioned engagement as one of the motivations for choosing to do Istanbul and choosing to stick with it despite some varying conditions right now. I was curious with you if there was anything particularly motivating about taking on an institution like Manifesta and in a situation of like Zurich, for instance, which was already a bit of a break from some of the other locations. Do you mind speaking a little bit about that decision for you?
The decision, again, about what?
Well, just when you're talking about, they were talking about engagement as a way to.
Yeah, for me that's also like so important to use existing energies, and you know, as I said, Zurich was not my choice, but I also had nothing against Zurich. I think I liked Zurich, I had some experience before, and of course the concept for me at least dealt with some issues of Zurich. So that's most expensive place almost in Europe to produce art. Even though it's now such an important place for deal with art and selling art, the business is there. But actually the artists are moving away from Zurich. They come to Berlin or go to New York. So but to say, we invite people from all over the world to come to Zurich and produce in Zurich artwork, for me was somehow a way to communicate with it. The super high expectations of Zurich people, they have so many good institutions, all of the, so many informed curators that bring really challenging new artists into the city continuously. And also an art school that is quite rich and where many people are coming to hold lectures, etc. But it's still very, how can I say, it seems, even though it's alive on this money side and the institution and also the art school is a business enterprise in its own right, to now say how can we activate people that somehow come together, especially not for the money. So the title, What People Do For Money, of course implied the question, what are they ready to do with no money? Of course, it was leading to many misunderstandings, and also people were saying this should be an exhibition about the new ways how job in the future change, etc. No, for me it was very much you know, the engagement of people, bringing them together and try to create a web between them where we start to go on a journey together. And we say just yes to each other, like almost it's a little wedding ceremony between host and artist, and we see where this journey ends. And it was ending in different forms. There was one exhibition in an art institution, but then also, I don't know, the police department showed in the institution, but also in the station. So there was this visiting idea. We come with our people and see in the art institution, but also the art people went to these places of the hosts. And then, yeah, and also to take away a bit of the way how I understood a manifesto also, many times claiming something, what they want to prove on one place. So I many times also had to defend in a way that each artist could take his own journey to whatever he wants to talk about. It was not framing the artist, oh, this doesn't fit into the concept of we want to deal with new professions. Mm-hmm. You know, who looks with a glass of new professions into new professions could see something in each of these works. And it was, maybe I'm getting too far, but.
No, that's fine. I think actually the question I was probably trying to ask was, Yin ended his statement saying, you know, that why aren't artists thinking of more challenging formats?
But I couldn't think of any more challenging thing. Ask, you know, Georgina just, she was working with me very close to put this together. She's in the audience, Georgina Kaspar. And it was challenging because we were, you know, trying to find this host, keep them on board all the time, keep the artists happy, because also the challenge, when you come up with a concept to other artists, it also you give it not only a space in this way, I also ask them to have kind of monoculture going on with one specific other person. So it was also my form an experience. I mean, of course you're used to have topics or spaces that give topics, yeah, but also now you're also linked to another human being that also has a certain focus, a certain vocabulary, certain interest, why to interact with art, and who also did not get paid. The hosts never get paid.
Right. The whole time, the hosts were not paid.
No, they were not paid.
Uh-huh. So were they just for no money?
Yeah.
Do you want to speak more, or you want to
say? Maybe I lost the time.
Okay. Well, part of Yen, to reference another part of Yen's statement, he talked about the idea of choosing artists for Biennales as maybe a kind of backlash to the glorified curator figure Did you personally experience any backlash from your decision to take on the Biennale in the Agra case?
Backlash means that I'm disappointed that I did it
or
the hard time.
Or feedback that might be cynical or dismissive of the project, or taking on the project. In Turkey, it might be more politically loaded.
So how critics or people thought about the Biennale?
Or thought about you as an artist taking on this curatorial task.
Yeah.
On a scale that you might not have previously worked on.
How people reacted to it, the question. Yeah, I mean,
it's not trying to force you in a corner. I'm not sure if you guys... If
I
you
don't
have
know.
Answer.
I don't know, except you have to take the question, honestly. Help me.
Well, Jens was saying that there was that he sees a backlash against the figure of the curator, but I was wondering if there's a backlash against the artist taking on the curatorial role.
Yeah, of course, you're in a newer situation. You're amongst artists, with artists, and then you are related to institutions, curators, etc. Now, suddenly, you're also a bit a different person to other artists that are normally on your list. So you get very special SMS, or people want to suddenly contact you, or they call you all the time. You know, it was on some part difficult with some characters who I first had a completely different opinion about. And now I know, oh, that's why they're so often in a Biennale, because they go so much on the nerves of the curators. You know, but it's also on the other hand just the opposite around. It's also very nice that now, after the Biennale, there's also some calls from artists that say finally, hey, you know, I want to say thank you for doing this, because I know it took some time away from your work, you couldn't do this, but you did this now for other artists. And I thought, wow, did I really hear this now, half a year later, before I get also so much critique about it, because the people either liked it or they didn't like Manifesto 11. I know nobody who said it was okay. It's either or. It's just extreme.
Well, I mean, for us it's of course too early to say, to talk about the backlash, because we haven't actually done our Biennale.
But you have curated other projects that are including...
They were more and maybe more of an integrated part of our own artistic practice, whereas the Istanbul Biennale is something, you know, completely different. We do not include our own art, we do not stage as we have done in prior experiences.
So you're not interfering with the aesthetic presentation?
No, of course. We are too interested in space, and the space is our informant too much of that process and what we're doing to ignore that. But so we're involved in exhibition architecture, but that's different from these exhibitions we've done, for instance, at the Venice Biennale, the Nordic and Danish Pavilions, or in the Grand Albert Museum. But I think what we can say that we will, of course, have a backlash in many ways in a situation where the biennial will fail in many people's eyes, because there's just too many expectations. And actually, I just came from Istanbul last night to Milan, and I had a coffee in the morning with Fulvia, and she said, you know, they are going to expect you basically to solve all the problems that are going on at the moment. You know, that people are going to expect you to solve the terrible problem, to solve the problems around freedom of speech and so on. And of course, as curators, that's impossible. As artists, as single artists or collaborators, that's impossible. We are in a situation where we sort of have to trust that the selection of artists that we have done and what we show is together and within the individual presentation standing for something completely different than the government and, you know, current authorities are standing for. I'm surprised that Jens is coming off with that question at all. I mean, like, I didn't think he would be so worried about issues like that. I mean, if we were too worried about things like that, I don't think we would have taken on the task at first place. So, will changing the format, I think, also
this idea of being a bit tired of the biennial as an exhibition, or being a little bit tired of all the different formats in the art world, is a luxury that is over now. You know, we have suddenly got a world where we can't afford to be so misanthropic, we can't afford to be so fucking ignorant, and I have seen it all. I think we will learn as artists, as curators, as people, workers in the cultural sector, to appreciate our opportunities and the possibilities that we actually have to say something in kind of reasonable environments and meet and exchange our ideas. And we were not so aware of that tremendous luxury a few years ago, but today we are confronted with a different reality.
Totally agreed. Also think that in one hand, this big expectations also you talk about, you know, that people want you to, you know, to put this in a few words, what this all is, criticality is about, etc. I mean, I think it's also leading you into a position where you already, like, you do the mirror of your mirror, and you think, when you do like this, what happens then, what would they think? I think that, in a way, like, it's like doing artworks. You do artworks after another. You can only do so much in the position you're in, and then they also tell the story. And the way of saying, oh, we have to, with this art, we have to achieve this and this discussion. It's kind of difficult. I believe that when you're in it and you're aware and you also work with the energies there, you work with what you actually need, how people react to what you want to do, and then you just hold it there and put it and showcase it. That's the moment where it's much better instead of just doing this discussion. I really believe that in doing also in some activity to
to do as well.
It was a bit, but we did. We talked about this. We had some lunch. We also talked about, you know, certain galleries, etc. Also, where sometimes it's sometimes people are sometimes afraid about you know, how the public and everybody reacts to it. And I understand that because you're also similar, like a trademark, like Manifesta or Istanbul Biennial or any kind of company, you're representing them, and of course, as you said, you don't want to harm it. You want, but you also have to see that this is not a steady, it's not a mausoleum. Also, this institution needs to be proved, and you know, think about its own form and adjust to situations. And I think that's very important, and that's maybe something that also artists can do to institutions sometimes.
I think to refer to what you said, to Martinez was saying earlier on in another talk, that we also need the joy in the biennial, the communication with the audience. I mean, we have also had a tendency in recent years to either be hyper populist in you try to please an audience, you talk down to them, and then you give them shiny pastel colors and stupid teacups in the gift shop, and then you think you're satisfied. And, or you speak to yourself, an introvert, and to a very small group of people. And I think it is possible to be aware of a big audience. I think it is possible to actually reach out to a wider public without being dumb.
Yeah, okay with that. Well, I've got one more. When we first started talking about this, I asked you if the next documentary should be curated by an artist, and Michael says no. So I'm curious if you,
if you want
to go ahead and start answering. Yeah.
I mean, that artist would have to work 5 years. If you take 5 years out of your artistic career, you're not an artist any longer.
it's already hard to do it 2 years biannually, so no, it shouldn't.
I don't completely agree.
We all disagree, of course. No, we've been laughing about that, yeah.
No, but I think, you know, the next documenter should be curious by an artist, give a change to the next documenter could be curated by an artist. You know, the documenter is also such a joint effort these days. You know, I don't know how many, you mentioned 20 curators, I had 6, I don't, you know, but there's head of education, there's head of many different departments. I'm quite certain that documenta could also benefit from having artists within that curatorial team, whether or not it should be the artistic director that Adam is now and Oppo has done and so on and so forth. I'm not so sure because it's, you know, it could maybe be too far away from an artist on practice, but you know, maybe the right artist come around. We're not here to advocate, by the way, for the artist as curator, because I think there's so many artists that would hate being a curator. I think most of my friends would never, ever, ever do, and they don't understand what they're doing. So, you know, it's up to each and every one, I think. Many curators have been artists.
I mean, you have Francesco Bonami, you have Adriano Petrusa, Occo used to be a poet. Like, I mean, like many curators have their background in artistic practice.
And this focus on the curator as this specialized profession is also different from, like Daniel was saying, the context in Southeast Asia. Many of the artists are curating biennialism. So do you have anything you wanted to add to that before we open it up to questions? About artist creating
documenta? I agree to what they said. It's just, yeah, it's, you know, I don't have anything to say about it.
Well, I want to thank you, all three of you, for making time to come here. I know you had to just come in and out of the city really quickly, but I think we're going to open it up to questions, and if we can have the Jens photo one more time while we're having questions. I want to make sure, yeah, thank you. So, oh yeah, you're going to be right. So do we have any? Hi. I just wanted to talk about Turkey and the coming in of it. The reason for that is the condition, the political conditions or the situation, which I know very well, is quite growing more. And of course, with the elections in April, I mean, the constitution is going to be changed, maybe. So the Kasper Planning case that we had a few years ago is very much near to your case regarding two countries with the constitution and becoming two dictators. We're likely or not, we're going back to that day. But how, and all these limits that you are going to have, which are the political situation, that a country which is a Muslim country with certain limitations, and most of the budget that comes from the Koch family for, I mean, the budget of the Biennale. So all these conditions, how much and how free are you to do an exhibition, which is a Biennale, and people, especially the Turkish, who are into the art field or not, are looking to something of having the freedom because they themselves have so much conditions for that. So what is your point? I don't want to spoil it, but it's just a question.
I mean, the situation in Turkey at the moment is, so you can't say what you want in the media, for instance. That made the artistic format even more urgent, because maybe you can say things in a different way within the exhibition. Things you cannot maybe say so directly in the media. It is really a very, very special situation to curate an exhibition in a country where a lot of academics have been imprisoned or fired and punished because they couldn't come with their statements the way they wanted to do. Not not very different from a place like China, where people don't question doing big scale exhibitions, but they also don't have, like, we have done exhibitions there where you don't have a freedom of speech as such. We think it's really important for the around 50% who is maybe disagreeing with the government policies at the moment in Turkey to have events, forum where they can exchange ideas, and not feeling isolated, not having just to hide completely all the time, and the biennial become in its own tiny little modest way, well, one of many platforms that try to make it possible for people to meet in public and feel a certain solidarity. But of course, a biennial exhibition cannot solve so heavy political problems. It's an illusion. I mean, it never happened, and it will not happen with us. But there is a possibility to create a framework where some of the conversations that stop can continue. The problem for a lot of intellectuals in Turkey is also all the specialists, all the experts in certain fields, they're only confronted with questions about the political situation at the moment. So they have to erase their whole identity, their whole interest field, what they normally work with, and just be for or against Erdogan. And our show will not be for or against Erdogan as such, because I'm not dedicating my biennial to him. I don't think it's worth it. It tries to line up identities, living modes, visions, suggestions that is hopefully trying to line up positive alternatives to what is offered by the government policies, and of course also with criticism and critiques from certain artists. But first of all, like, it is an event that can bring people together, and there are 400,000 people locally who come to the Istanbul Biennial, so that is not to underestimate in itself as a manifestation, I think.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, we also try to spend as much time there as possible and also listen a lot to the local communities, and we're learning a lot from them as well, of course. You know, it's not always the direct criticism at the moment is the best way. And just, you know, just to come with a couple of examples, for instance, the LGBTQ community, they're not able to have their pride marches, for instance, now, or the last couple of years. It used to be, you know, a quite large one until quite recently, but now, since Jay-Z in 2013, it's not possible. But, you know, they have found other ways to do it already. But, you know, last year was quite successful, where they, through social media, made people stand on balconies and gather in small groups or walk alone, you know, all around the Olu and Istanbul. And actually it sort of gained maybe even more attention in a way, especially through the reports on social media than what the parade would have done. I mean, I'm not saying that this is positive only, but this is a way to sort of, you know, to find different ways of criticism. Another example is, for instance, when a lot of the Kurdish artists, they are also often teaching, they got fired from their positions
And I know from the art community in Eastern world that they try to, you know, first think about writing a petition and see how they could protest the media, but in dialogue with these artists, they found out that it was better for the time being to keep quiet and sort of observe the situation. And, you know, a majority of them were actually released later on and got their they got their positions back actually as teachers. So sometimes one has to be careful in this situation that society is right now. And some things we're trying to do in the exhibition and with some related projects around the diamond as well, not least the billboard project that we have all around the world, is to sort of make parallels to other countries in the world as well. Now that's many of the questions around Turkey, around populist politics or authoritarian politics and so on, that are so relevant. I mean, as we know, sadly, not least in America, even in the US at the moment, if you have other countries like Brazil or India, you know, we have Brexit recently, that is, so, you know, trying to understand the effects of and so on. So we hope, you know, that we can make maybe like a broader, deeper perspective also onto what is happening in Turkey, because it's not so one-sided. I mean, if you only read, and then you live in Berlin, and if you only read German newspapers at the moment, you have the impression that you cannot go, that it's wrong to go, and so on. Boycott is the only way, but this really has to be debated, really. And then in the exhibition itself, there's also other, you know, sometimes you can also, by showing artworks that have been made by artists maybe in a similar political situation that Turkey finds itself now, the audience might hopefully or potentially be able to draw these parallels themselves as well, maybe with the help of the text and so on that are written around them to how it is now, and also gain maybe some hope from that. That could be, for instance, art drawn by the Egyptian artists that we have invited, or another example would be an artist from Argentina that did her work as Argentina was coming out of that dictatorship. And so, well, now I'm going on. Okay.
Talking about doing biennial in a very politically charged environment, and the question you have to do a biennial in an atmosphere that has a very well established art market, at least. So I think everybody was expecting one of those to come and disrupt everything and throw it upside down. I want to know of course, of every period there's the pressure to realize something interesting, something different, something new, something wowing, but is there maybe an additional pressure to artists to curate large shows and biennials, kind of like that you are, because you are different than a curator, that you somehow have a formula to realize something in an even better way, that you will come up with a solution that is new? And, you know, do you feel that as an artist? Or?
I understand what you mean by the question, but I don't think people, they maybe have a more openness towards what we will do because they don't have such a long tradition of artists curating the bigger art events, so you don't have the ready-made, already existing parameters. So I think we feel relatively free in choosing what kind of format we want. We have been working from using our experiences as artists. We do a biennial that is relatively small compared to a lot of other biennials, because as an artist I've been invited to a lot of biennials where the curators never had really time to
have a dialogue with me, and I never appreciated that, just being a brick in the big puzzle. So we have only invited a number of artists where we're sure that, well, the two of us can have a proper dialogue with everyone about what they're doing and why they're doing it, so they feel invited. We have also been trying to give the artist a certain freedom. We have a title that is not totally lining out, as you were mentioning, like what we expect the artist to do. It's called A Good Neighbor. The title became even more loaded with a changed political situation in Turkey, but of course it can contain a lot of different issues, from like real, on a concrete level, small scale neighborhood issues, living modes, but of course also geopolitical issues, such as Turkey being next to Syria, next to Europe, UK being experiencing Brexit and maybe not being such a good neighbor, the border between Mexico and US at the moment. So like it opens for quite a lot. And instead of making a statement that could turn out to be very problematic in under the current censorship situation in Turkey, we just wrote down 40 different questions, and at our press conference in Istanbul, we had 40 people from all kind of different backgrounds and ages, and girls and boys, and old women, and big men, asking one by one on stage a question like, is a good neighbor someone who reads the same newspaper as you? And of course everyone in the audience crack off, because yeah, of course they read the same newspaper as you, because like all the alternatives have been closed down. But if we would say that and make a big problem out of that, well, there would have been coming someone saying like, no, you cannot do that. But in a way, as an artist, as a curator, you have to hope for you being more clever and tricky than the people who oppose the censorship on you. And you can come around with it because you can do it in a more sophisticated way, hopefully. Yeah, they're like been on e-vlogs. They were like at the press conference, and we had this billboard campaign where we worked together with one of the participants, a photographer, and also to spread out the biennial to other places. We have it in Ireland now. We will have it in Manchester. We will hopefully have it in Berlin. Maybe in, yeah, we will have it here in Milan as well. The billboard with different questions and different photos, and then just in small, it says the Istanbul Biennial, but as some kind of like, also a signal of the problems in Turkey are not isolated. They're very closely connected to a lot of problems around in Europe and elsewhere on the place right now.
In the pressure as an artist, I also don't think of me. I can only think with this hat, so I don't have a curator hat and an artist hat. So my perspective to whatever I do, if I wake up in the morning, I cook my coffee as a curator or as an artist, it's going to be the same coffee. And in the same way, I also took the challenge to create something similar. I also thought I do my best. I do it in the same approach how I do an artwork, and I don't make a big fuss out of it that this is an artwork and not a biennial. It's, you know, it doesn't matter how you call it. It's even interesting if it's a little bit open, but I, you know, that's also one thing that you can maybe add to a show, that it maybe this kind of an artwork, but to put it already as a frame and I say this is now an artwork, a biennial as an artwork, it would sound very pretentious and very stupid and would also limit it in a completely wrong way. It should be read and seen as something that works as an exhibition, as a biennial, where yeah, many people can, you know, work in and that can have very individual experiences that are also not lent, you know, committed to institutions or countries or interests of certain parties, etc., but that, you know, talk most individual to most individual people in their own way. And that's why I really think it's a great concept for Istanbul, and I'm completely opposed and against censoring and saying you cannot go there because you have to make a statement, because thinking about it, there are also witnesses there. If not you, there's no like kind of third eye. I don't know, maybe it's also stupid or naive from my end, but I somehow believe in powers of art and that it can bring people together. And in the end, this thing of saying I'm not going there, I'm not doing it, it doesn't, you know, harm the system over there. It doesn't harm things we don't like over there or where some people do a crazy power play. I think I much more believe in this, energy of art to mix things and hierarchies and values up. So, and that's why I think it's good to go there and do it. And in the end, I think art talks to people and not to institutions.
I want to thank you guys again for coming. I think you'll be in the room a little bit longer if anyone else has any other questions. Unless there's one more. All right, and I want to thank you again, Diana and Ben, for having us, and the WeArt team for making this possible. Thank you.